The Jodcast. Reaching the places other astronomy podcasts just can't reach. From the National Astronomy Meeting, Day 2.
Hello and welcome to the end of Day 2 at the National Astronomy Meeting. Like yesterday, we've had another very long day, and I've just got back from the conference dinner and Kayleigh, which, by the way, was really great fun, and we probably had around 100 astronomers, including people like Chris Lintott and Lucy Green, all dancing around and having a great time. But it's not just all been about food, dancing and socialising. We've also had plenty of science sessions, in fact, lots of them going on in parallel, which means people have to make difficult choices about which ones they want to go to. We've also seen the first batch of press releases related to announcements that are taking place this week. And earlier, Nick caught up with Dr. Chris Waring to find out more about a press release titled Dying Sun-like Stars Leave Whirlpools in Their Wake.
Well, what we've been doing over the last few years at Jodrell Bank, using the supercomputer there, Cobra, is running a number of three-dimensional computer simulations and modelling what's going to happen when stars like our Sun reach the end of their life. Our Sun is about 5 billion years old, so we've got another 5 billion years to go before this kind of thing happens. But what we've been thinking about is what happens if you move a star like our Sun through its local kind of medium, the local surrounding material. It's called the interstellar medium.
Right.
So we've been giving stars a velocity, a motion typical of other stars of this kind in the galaxy, and that's a kind of incredulous sounding 25,000 meters per second, all the way up to 200 kilometers per second. And we've been modeling these, and we find that as the star moves through its later stages of evolution, when our Sun gets towards the end of its life, it's going to run out of burning hydrogen and start to burn helium, and its material is going to drift off into space, and as much as half of the material on the Sun is going to drift off into space. So, as it does, if the star's moving through the interstellar medium, then what happens is you get a bow shock ahead of the star, just like you get a bow shock ahead of a boat on the ocean, on ships, etc. So that bow shock forms a certain distance ahead of the star. What we see in the bow shock is instabilities, the same instabilities that you can see in oceans, the same instabilities that actually are thought to cause things like the Great Red Storm on Jupiter. Mm-hmm. And these instabilities form at the head of the bow shock, flow backwards down into the turbulent wake, into the area behind it, and form spiraling whirlpools. These whirlpools are 0.3 to 30 light years across. And they seem to form stable structures that flow down the tail and back into the interstellar space. So a star that's moving at, say, 150 kilometres per second will travel a couple of hundred parsecs in its lifetime and leave a wake behind it with these vortices in the wake.
Because the stuff the star's made of is being
peeled off. Basically. This is returning stellar material, returning stuff that only forms in stars, the life material, carbon, nitrogen, oxygen, that we're all made of, returning it to the interstellar medium and mixing it as well. And it also provides the interstellar medium with a source of angular momentum, which is essential for star formation in clouds and the next generation of stars.
Is this the only way that we can get these elements from these stars back into the interstellar medium, or are there other channels?
There are other channels that return these elements back into space, such as supernovae and Wolf-Rayet stars that also produce winds like the winds that we get off stars like our dying Sun. Stars that would be like our dying Sun. But our way of returning them perhaps isn't as strong as these others, but it still returns a significant fraction of material and power back into the ISM and angular momentum back into the ISM.
How much stellar matter gets peeled off the star in this way?
AGB stars, which is the late evolution stage of our Sun, lose half of their mass back into the ISM, and that's approximately between half a stellar mass and up to a couple of stellar masses. Anything from about a stellar mass up to about a 6 stellar mass initial mass star will end up as an AGB star, which will then become a planetary nebula afterwards as well. And during the AGB stage, they will lose up to half of the mass.
In relative terms, that's a huge amount. That's 50% of the star gets blown off, basically, due to this interaction between the star's motion
yes.
and the ISM.
It is a huge amount, and they leave it over such a great distance if they're moving quickly as well. Mm. The average speed of these kind of stars through the galaxy is perhaps only 50 to 75 kilometers per second at most. But there are cases of high-speed stars. Sharpless 2-188 is a planetary nebula that I've worked on that is a case that's moving at 125 kilometers per second.
So these results came from your theoretical models. You plug the numbers into your computer and you figured out this is what should happen when you have a star of this size, this volume, going through the material of this density, etc.
Yes.
What else have you found?
Well, we did the simulations for a range of mass loss rates on the asymptotic giant branch and a range of local densities and a range of velocities. And we found that the common thing that happens is that you do get this bow shock ahead of the star. That is crucial to understanding how the planetary nebula forms in the following stage of post-AGB evolution. So the planetary nebula initially forms within the cocoon of material that's cocooned behind the bow shock. Then as it expands and acts as it would as if there was nothing else there inhibiting it. But eventually it'll expand far enough to interact with the bow shock itself. And at that point, we can identify these planetary nebulae that show signs of PN-ISM interaction. As that happens, then the third stage of the interaction is where the geometric centre of the nebula, what you might see if you just looked at the nebula and picked where you would think the centre was, that starts to shift back downstream, away from the bow shock, because ahead of the star, the bow shock's inhibiting the expansion of the nebula. Behind it, it's just expanding freely into the tail of material. And then eventually the whole thing is just disrupted, and you can end up with a lone central star that should have a planetary nebula that, if you observed it, wouldn't, because the planetary nebula has been swept away.
Right.
So an interesting question that came up, that's a future question for research that came up this morning in the presentation, is if we studied all the stars that have a proper motion, how many of them may well have had a planetary nebula that's been swept away?
Right.
Because the major question in our current area is, well, one of the major questions in planetary nebula work and AGB star work is actually putting a number on the galactic population of these type of stars, as in any kind of stellar astronomy. Part of the arguments and part of the problems is how many binaries there are and whether binaries have any effect on the structure of the planetary nebula, because PN show these wonderful range of shapes from beautiful round shapes to butterflies to bipolar hourglass-like nebulae, and we don't quite know how we get all these different shapes from what look to be symmetrical progenitors. Is it a binary system, or are we looking at magnetic fields playing a role? These are the unresolved questions that we have, and people are trying to settle the debate as they do. And many are settling towards the binary side of things. And if we can shed some more light on the populations of these kind of stars and objects that haven't previously been classed as planetary nebulae, then we can shed a lot more light on populations of AGB stars and planetary nebulae as a whole.
Would it be true that if you saw a star with high proper motion, one which is moving apparently very quickly, if you look back along its direction of travel, would you expect to see, perhaps in some cases, the remnants of a planetary nebula, that it's been blown off and it's left behind?
Yes, there is a case of a planetary nebula, I think it's Sharpless 2-68, which appears to be a central star that's moved outside its planetary nebulae. Now, that's a relatively obvious case, because it's very near to the planetary nebulae, it's the only PN, it's the only candidate central star in the field, which is why they suspect it's moved outside the planetary nebulae. But if you consider my research and the wake of the star, so a fast-moving star would leave this large wake, and it's quite possible that somewhere in the background of these high-density areas that could just be considered as clouds, as Herbig-Haro objects, that these could have been associated with the star that's gone through, that's sped through the area and left its planetary nebula behind. This kind of thing is very important to upcoming surveys that have the ability to look at faint structure and take deep observations.
Tell us a little bit more about how you actually did the theoretical modelling.
Well, we used a computational scheme that I developed during my PhD, and the main thing that I did in that time was something called making the scheme parallel, which is instead of running it on one computer, we run it on, let's say, 10 or 20 computers at once, so that you can run it 10 or 20 times quicker. Or if you wanted, you could run something that was 10 or 20 times larger in the same time. So that's the point of doing parallel computing. The astrophysical model that we developed basically is what we call the triple wind model. And this has a wind that's due to the asymptotic giant branch evolution, which has a stellar mass loss that loses, shall we say, somewhere between 10 to the minus 6 and 10 to the minus 7 solar masses per year. And then a wind for the post-AGB evolution, which is when the planetary nebula forms, which is perhaps 10 to the minus 8 solar masses per year, but is much faster. It's the AGB wind is perhaps only 15 kilometers per second, but the post-AGB wind is perhaps 1,000 kilometers per second. And then there's a third wind due to the motion of the ISM. So we perform the computer simulation in the frame of reference of the central star of the planetary nebula, and we sweep past it, the ISM, and give that the velocity between 0 and 200 kilometers per second that we talked about before.
Sounds fantastic. Thank you very much indeed for all your help.
Thanks, Nick. So that's it for today. Come back tomorrow and we'll hopefully have some more for you. Bye for now.